Welcome back to the Between Dreams podcast. It's Chris and today's guest, Peter Hastings. Another episode coast to coast. I'm here in Atlanta. Peter, you're in
Los Angeles.
It looks like you're in a secret cave of the Hollywood Hills, of a creative cave of in the Hollywood Hills at your production space of a house similar to what I'm trying to. You have the ultimate like creation house, which we'll get into in a little bit. And it's been a cool theme with a lot of the guests of people who have made a bunch of stuff that people know about, but they might not necessarily know your name or your face. And you've been kind of behind things for many years in showbiz and TV and music, and you've created a whole lot of things. I won't read your resume because I'm sure a lot of people have done that to you in the past, but between producing and writing and creating animated TV shows and then being a musician and a photographer. And my favorite thing about you is that you kind of just jump around and dabble into everything creative. So,
yeah.
One of my favorite things of this show is allowing you to pick the one or two brag-worthy things to include in your intro. So is there one or two things that you would introduce yourself as to give the listeners a little bit of context of your background?
Well, I mean, I could tell you a little bit about the various things that I've done because they all kind of feed into what I do now. You know, brag-worthy is that I won a bunch of Emmys doing animation for probably the single most valuable one to me was for Pinky and the Brain. It was a Christmas special and it was a Primetime Emmy Award we won for that. And then also won for Animaniacs and Kung Fu Panda TV series and a George Foster Peabody Award for Animaniacs, which I didn't know what it was when I got it. Now I know. And it's very prestigious. I'm a little drunk. No. But you know, I could just give you a brief rundown of sort of my path.
And that's cool. I think just to give people, that was cool of giving people a little bit of that context. And we can kind of get right into it. It's like one of your, and we'll give a shout out to the Creative Pep Talk podcast, because that was kind of what inspired when I heard you. You know, we've known each other for a handful of years through Booby Trap world and live performance in that world. And other interview that you did kind of opened up, and I hadn't really heard you talk like in that much depth about all of that stuff. You know, we've had little side conversations, and a few of those things that particularly were especially interesting to me to hear was like how you have that ability to jump around. And one of my favorite parts of that talk was like, oh, you just like go over to the other room and see a photo on the computer, start editing that. But that's not necessarily a bad thing, because I think a lot of people, especially in creative fields, are like, oh, you have to niche down and do one thing and specialize in one thing, which is important. But also the importance in creativity to be able to like find inspiration from over here and then be thinking about music or photos, and then that come and be relevant when you're recording a voiceover or something, and it brings it together. So yeah, maybe do you have anything particularly in that, like bringing from your past, you know, and you can get into that maybe a little bit too, of being traditionally a musician and then bringing that into all the other realms of what you're creating now?
Yeah. I mean, I think I just always had a natural desire to be creative. And so, you know, when I was a kid, I did plays in school. I started playing guitar when I was in fifth grade. I wanted to be a musician. I started working in theater as a teenager. I worked in a summer stock theater and with a bunch of 20 somethings. And then I wanted to do scenic and lighting design, you know, for college. And then between the music I was playing and the pot that I was smoking, I stopped wanting to do that. And I just wanted to play music. And was doing that. I was in Boulder, Colorado. I was playing music. I was doing sound for bands. And it just one day when I was not till I was 21, I was like, I need to move on or I'm just going to be like a dude from Boulder, Colorado. So I went to Berklee College of Music. So I studied music earnestly. And then I came out to Los Angeles to like go to a 1 year school that was out here. Then by the end of that year, it's sort of like I had gigs, I had a girlfriend, I was teaching at the school. And then my neighbors got me involved in an acting class that they had, and I wrote something for that. And then they, and people said like, oh, you should go check out the Groundlings Theater, cause they do that kind of character sort of stuff. Didn't really know anything about that. Got into the went to the Groundlings. Groundlings is sketch comedy theater that has, it's like sort of where Pee Wee Herman comes from, and Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig and Melissa McCarthy and, you know, lots and lots of people, SNL people and stuff. And I ended up going through that whole program and was in their Sunday show, which is where I started to write, and then was in the performing company kind of the Groundlings for a while. And then I started getting work in animation, writing work. So that's been my primary career since I was like 30, 28, 30, something like that. And, you know, but I still played music. I still had all this other stuff. I was kind of always taking pictures, and I kind of really got into that a lot. So my, sort of my three main areas where I work creatively are music, photography, and then screen stuff, you know, TV and movies. But, you know, what you were talking about before about all these different disciplines and stuff is that when I got involved in different disciplines, I start to see a bigger picture about how the fundamentals of what makes them work is kind of all the same. The really simple things about tension and release and about, you know, what's interesting, what's not, how to do something that you feel versus and not doing something that you expect someone else to like. And a lot of very fundamental connections happen between all of these things. So for me, I walk around and you know, I will walk around my house like total ADD, which I claim not to have, but my kids say that I'm wrong. Is, you know, and walk around and edit some photographs. And then I go like, I need something in my room. And as I'm walking in the room, I pick up an instrument and I'll start playing an instrument. And, you know, this just like goes on and on all the time. So what I found is that in all of those disciplines, as opposed to being super specific and focused, number one, they all inform each other. And I kind of move very broadly forward in all of these different things. And it's not really, I wouldn't say it's really the best thing to do professionally. It's so much easier, kind of like what you were talking about, to be like, oh, he's the guy who, like, let's say if you were a juggler, you know, is even to say like, oh, he's the guy who juggles the chickens. And everyone goes like, oh yeah, that guy, right?
Yeah.
Or you're a photographer and you go like, oh, he does all this like blurry black and white stuff that's really high contrast. Or she does these crazy flash celebrity portraits or stuff like that. And that's the way we tend to sort of, you know, point at artists about what they do. Or he's a heavy metal guitarist or, you know, whatever it is. So the sort of broad approach that I do is not necessarily the best professional approach, but it's super satisfying personal approach. And it's really, I mean, I just kind of accept it. The many times when I've sort of said, even like in, let's say in my photography, I go like, just pick one thing that people really respond to and just do that thing.
Yeah.
It's sort of like people say like, how do you get a gallery show for, as a painter or photographer? And you go like, take one thing and then just take a ton of pictures of it,
yeah.
You know, or take a coffee cup and do 80 paintings of it, you know, and you have that sort of identity. I advise that. I think that's great when you are trying a bunch of stuff and you hit on something, you go like, oh my God, this brings me so much happiness to paint this coffee cup. And the other stuff that I'm messing with, not so much, you know, or the response to when I do this and I like doing it is so great. You know, that's, you know, what I want to do.
Well,
look, that answer was big and broad and went all over the place.
It was
too.
Great.
How about that?
And I want to rewind just a touch and into that of how you say that might not be the best professional advice to be able to do, you know, to kind of like have a kind of, I pictured that when you said it, of like those like big snow plows that can plow like 8 lanes of stuff. It's like, yeah, it's just getting everything, but like, I don't know, it might be working, but it's overall just pushing everything forward. And how you said, like, that might not be the best professional advice, yet you've, according to your intro and your resume and, like, seeing what you've accomplished and what you've been able to create, you have accomplished, like, a lot of mainstream and personal satisfaction success.
That's true. It's a bit more of a long game, though, I think.
Yeah.
You know, than like somebody who's got a very specific thing they do, and at 23 years old,
yeah,
they take off like a rocket. You know, it can be. I don't know, in any field, like you could be a stand-up and that happens, or you know, a musician or something like that. I don't know that you can really control that so much. You know, it's just like, you know, you try, you point in the direction you want to go, you make an effort, and you know, you do try to do what you like, and then, you know, some people just hit it, you know, and most of us don't, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking to somebody else about that, of like, that long game is a really interesting one too, because especially now, more and more, increasingly so, as time goes on, people looking for like their one shot. Oh, I gotta like get this one shot. And I have a kind of like, I've like never had a successful like viral YouTube video, never had one of my projects be like, oh, that's the thing you did. You know, I had some cool moments, like making the Ellen appearance was like a cool thing, but it's not like a career changing moment where, you know, I like can go buy new cars after. I've never had that moment. But so much of the stuff that I've done is kind of that slow accumulation. It's like, oh, do like 100 episodes of a podcast. None of them were ever viral or had very, you know, a ton of viewers or never made it onto any big platforms. But people know me like, oh, yeah, his podcast is really good. So it has that, like, that work. And it's like that long thing where it's like, I did the same thing with the juggling show. Kind of, it was like, there was never like this moment that blew up, but it was like, oh, he's consistent. He'll show up. He'll be professional. The show will be good. And I think that's a really core thing of that I've been exploring a lot. As you know, with like TikTok is like, oh, make a video every day, not so that you have a good body of work, so that one of them blows up and becomes viral, is a little bit of a backwards idea to me. And that really resonated.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the thing is, it's like we put down performers who are really successful a lot of times. Like somebody could say like, oh, Britney Spears can't sing, whatever. And then, but the fact is there is a combination of stuff that she has or that somebody else has that put them in that position. So a lot of times there is luck involved and there's, you know, right place at the right time, but you also have to have the right stuff when that moment appears. So I know for me, there were definitely times when I was in the right place at the right time, but I didn't have the right stuff in that moment. Mm. I didn't know it. I didn't know it at that time because I thought I was ready to go, you know, but as you develop and you get better at something over time, and then you look back and you go like, oh, wow, I really wasn't that good then. It's a good thing I didn't know it because I would have quit.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that's very true, I think, of any creative craft. You know, the ignorance about how good you are or how good you aren't is really helpful, because that'll sort of just like keep you going, you know, to do that thing. But, you know, the fact is, you know, the sad fact is most of us are going to be in a, you know, who can develop a craft are going to be in this kind of like, you know, upper mid-level range. And it's not that many people really pop in some big, big way. I always felt like, you know, when I watched American Idol, like when it came on 800 years ago, the audition stuff was always so interesting, because you'd see people come in who are okay singers, and you know that they grew up with like, you're the best singer in this town. You're the best singer in school. Oh my gosh, you're as good as so-and-so. But then when they move onto a professional stage, And that's like, I'm not comparing you to the other kids in school. Now I'm comparing you to, you know, Pink or Celine Dion, or I'm comparing you to, you know, Ariana Grande, or, you know, whoever it is who's got some chops. And then, you know, then you see kind of how exceptional really, really good people are. You know, they're not just like regular people. They have whatever it took, including stardust that fell on them at some point. you know, to do that.
Yeah.
So, but I think, again, that just kind of goes back to what is it that, you know, kind of gives you joy when you're doing it. There's a funny saying that's about musicians, and this is probably true. This is probably a good juggler saying too, or any sort of performer, which is that, and it is like, how do you make a musician complain? Get him a gig. And it's like, you know, you get the gig and then you get to the gig and you go, this sucks, man. I was like, I'm so much better than this. You know, but you know, if you have that kind of bug, you have that creative bug, and it's like, that's what you do. You know, it's not necessarily about the success and stuff. I mean, there's so much TikTok and all that's kind of really about fame and, you know, kind of a Paris Hilton sort of syndrome, but I think in general, in creativity, it's just like, you know, you kind of can't help it. And that's where your, you know, joy is. There are also all these things that come up all the time where, you know, you see, like, let's say an independent movie, like, I mean, just to go back a few years, like a movie like Napoleon Dynamite or a movie like Little Miss Sunshine comes along. And then you go like, oh my gosh, I'm making one of those. That's so great. That movie cost $10,000 or whatever it is. You know, but the thing is, for every movie like that you've heard of, there are 5,000 of them, you know, that didn't get there.
Yeah.
And that's always a thing, you know. And the other thing you always hear is like, well, we followed our heart and we did what we needed to do and we didn't let anybody change what we were doing and stuff like that. I mean, truth of the matter is that most of the time that doesn't work.
You know? Right.
I have to say.
Yeah.
It's sad, but it's totally worth trying. And you get to be true to yourself in it. I'm just like wandering. I'm like a cow in a field wandering in this conversation. And
I'm letting you go. I let you
stepping in different gopher holes.
There was a few times in there where I was ready to jump in, and then I saw you spark another one. I was like, I'm letting it ride. I'm gonna keep letting it ride. That's one.
I just love the topic of creativity and how it works, and how to think about it, and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
and one of the reasons why my favorite things is letting people go past the point of when they feel like they should stop, because they start to just explore something past that point of their planned answer to a question that they've probably been asked before. Mm-hmm. And which pairs perfectly into the next thing I wanted to ask you about. And it's kind of paired with like a being like, going back to the basics type of idea. And then also we mentioned this right before we started recording about, you know, when I was juggling and you played music for me to be juggling to as part of the band at Booby Trap, Scott Neri's show in LA. And that was so fun because that group of musicians was able to, like, led by John and everyone, like, listening to each other and seeing what's happening, but then also kind of led by me, who was acting a little bit as the conductor of driving the ship by the juggling that I was doing. And in juggling, as in music, as in anything, I was able to, especially that 4-minute Booby Trap set where I was like, I wasn't really thinking about the juggling because it was all like relatively simple stuff. It was like 3 balls, 3 juggling clubs. I wasn't doing like high numbers things. And if I dropped something, it was okay. I could just like kick it back up and keep rocking. And I wanted to see how your thoughts of that I couldn't do that at the beginning when I was a younger juggler. I had to like do my routine. I didn't have that freedom to play and be flexible. And if I dropped, it was bad. You know, now it's like in the show, if I drop something, it's like, oh, that's fun. I can like kick it back up. Or there was times at Booby Trap and like a club would like fly into the audience and then the audience would throw it back at me. And I was like, that was the best part of the whole thing, because I was able to play in that thing. I was able to go back to the basics of listening to the audience, listening to the music and being in that moment. So what are your thoughts on that of somebody who's taken things to, you know, a expert professional level, but then able to realize that it's about the basics?
I mean, that sort of could kick off a lot of things. But the, you know, one of the things is my sort of three stages of learning a craft, which is number one is I don't know what I'm doing. Number two is I know what I'm doing. And number three is I don't know what I'm doing. So in number one, you're driven by emotion. You're driven by passion and desire. It's like, I really want to learn how to play music because I love music and I want to express myself. Or even like, I want to be rich. I mean, it's just like, there's an emotional drive to why you want to learn to juggle, or why you want to learn to play an instrument, or do anything, like you want to snowboard, whatever it is. And then as you take it seriously, and perhaps you take lessons, maybe you go to art school, something like that, you practice your butt off, right? And you learn about the other people. And then like, once you start, you know, and then it turns into something, which is, I know what I'm doing. And, but what happens with, I know what I'm doing, is it moves sort of from your heart up to your head and becomes much more intellectual. And then, and also one of the classic downfalls is once you really start to learn it and you start to understand how really, really good the really, really good people are, right? And you go like, oh, I'm not as good as I thought it was, you know? And then you work through that. But when you develop your skill and you practice, and practice is like the key to a million billion things, you pass over to that third stage, which is, I don't know what I'm doing, which is where the technical aspect of what I'm doing is not what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking in another way. So the really simple analogy is like, you learn how to drive a car. You don't think about driving the car. You think about where you're going. You think about the music you're listening to. You know, you're able to go to another sort of level. So that happens, you know, as a performer, that you get your skill together, and then you can start thinking about the bigger things, because what happens is the emotional drive comes back. And it becomes about the emotional thing. It becomes about being fun. And then it also becomes like, when you've made a bunch of mistakes, they don't bother you as much anymore, or you know how to recover from them and all that kind of stuff. So when we were on stage performing, all of us have the chops to be able to use what it is. I mean, if you're juggling three balls and I'm playing a bass, I mean, basically those things are our instrument that we're using to express ourselves. And ideally, you know, when you have an instrument, it's sort of like, you know, this other progression that happens when you start to learn something that requires some skill is, it's the boss. Like, when you start juggling, the balls are the boss, okay? And you are subservient to them because you're not very good, right? It's like the guitar is the boss. It's better. I can't control it. Yeah. Like breaking a horse. And then you go through this process and you start to become the boss of the instrument you're using. And so you can go from like, I want to play guitar. And it's like, why? Because I want to play songs. Why do you want to play songs? Because I want to make music. And it's like, well, why do you want to do that? It's like, because I want to express emotion. And the joy and fun in all of these things is the feeling that people get, you know, when they're watching you, because people only react to stuff that makes them feel something, whether it's care or sweetness or joy or tension or fear or whatever it is. That's what people react to. So one thing is, we develop our skills in a way that we can think about these more abstractly, and I can just watch what you're doing and I can play with it. I don't have to think about my instrument, you know, and you don't have to think about how you're going to, you know, juggle three balls. One of the other things you talked about too, when it comes to making mistakes, is that, you know, attitudes are contagious. And if you look or feel nervous on stage, that's what the audience gets, right? And when you're just like, I dropped a ball and I don't care, I'm going to make a joke about it, everybody's like, this is cool, this is fun. You know, that's like a big deal. And a side note, you know, one of the things that's so great about Scott Neary, so Scott, you know, the variety show that we performed with is unfortunately on hiatus. You know, Scott sets a tone that lets mistakes happen, you know, and he doesn't, it's not this perfectionist thing that's like, and it's like the mistakes are part of it. And it makes it so relaxed and so much fun and so kind of accepting and giving, you know, it's like a really good, it's a good vibe all around. So anyway, there's a bunch of things that are all happening on stage when we're doing that. You know, it's that skill level that we've all gotten to, and it's the paying attention. It's being able to, you know, look and listen. There's a cool thing a musician said about, which is like, use one of your ears to listen to yourself and use the other ear to listen to everybody else. And you do the same thing with your eyes too, you know, and just keep you know, all that stuff together. Womp, 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 womp. End of chapter two.
we are transcribing this.
Yes.
Do you know, Stefan, but do you know his like work of that getting out of your mind when you're thinking as in the performance?
Stefan, I don't think I do.
Oh, he's like a friend of Scott's and has a lot of that stuff. It's really cool. You know, he trains like Cirque du Soleil world-class skill artists who are the best in the world at their skill, but they might not be the best in the world at being entertainers, which is a subtle, but not so subtle difference. You know, it seems subtle from like a general audience of people like, oh, get really good at your thing. And then it's like, okay, well, no one cares how good, how many balls you can juggle. And he has a whole world of where to go when you, and trains people to recognize when they're in their mind and in their brain and worried about the trick. And he has tools to actually go somewhere else of like, you can go back to the earth and you, that means like you might find a prop on stage that you can discover for the first time. And now people are going to respond to that in a much stronger way when you respond as a child discovering this, you know, box on the ground. That was my thing when I did a little workshop with him. He was like, you're an expert with these boxes, but no one can relate to being an expert with these boxes. It's like you can discover, but what if you discovered with them that you know how to manipulate them in a really cool way? And that was something that like really, I worked with him a little bit trying to get people to care about juggling. And that was a really cool thing that opened up in that of like, when you realize you're in your brain going to a place, do you have any things like that of like when you realize that you're like, oh, I'm worried about hitting the right note right now?
It kind of makes me think kind of a few things. One is really about kind of working on your craft and getting good at it, particularly if it's just some physical thing that you need to do. And to me, when I learned to play an instrument, I sort of decided that it's like if I have a lesson and somebody says, gives me some information. So now I've got it in my head and then I start practicing it. Basically what's happening is it's creeping from my head down into my hands, right? And what I'm doing is I'm teaching my hands how to do it, because your hands learn how to do stuff and they can do it by themselves. I mean, I've learned to play like some Bach pieces and I couldn't sing it to you, but my hands know how to play it. Yeah. You know, that your hands do that. And then that frees you up, you know, to be, you know, to be open kind of on another level. But talking about the kind of that progression of like sharing with the audience, you know, sometimes you see somebody who is so good at something that you're not even catching what they do. You know, it's like, I don't even know what you're doing. It's just like, it's so beyond, and I'm sort of receiving it in a certain way, but it's not like, oh, you did one flip. It's like you did one flip and three spins and something. And I couldn't even like catch it all. And I think that process of sharing with the audience, like each step of the way, right? I mean, it's, you know, it's a kind of a classic performer trick is to kind of get somebody to be impressed with something that's like mid-level as a setup for taking it to the next, you know, to take it somewhere else. So I think the audience experience is really important to think about in terms of like, what would I think if I was in the audience too? A little different than what you were talking about, but I think that whole process of taking the audience by the hand and I'm going to tell you this, right? And then you're going to get what it is that I'm doing, right? You're going to understand what it is that I'm doing, but I can't just do it all up front because you won't get it. Right? It's just like, I'm going to tell you an entire story all at once. No, I'm going to tell you this part and then I'm going to tell you this part. So when we get to here, you'll understand everything. That whole process too is just making me, because I'm just like spinning off here. But the one of the trickiest things that I've learned in writing is this thing of withholding information. And it's kind of similar to what you're talking about, which is how much information do I tell the audience and how much do I withhold? right? So even let's say you were doing an act and then an act has a build to it. It's like, am I just going to come out and do my biggest badass thing right away? It's like, no, I want to take you piece by piece and do this. And then I'm going to do that. And then I'm going to build upon it. And you'll be able to really, really see what's happening. The answer to the question, how much do I give out and how much do I withhold, is I want to give you enough to know what's going on, but withhold enough so you wonder what's going to happen next. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's how I do it, like in writing. Mm-hmm. But I think that's totally true that people do stuff and they're so good at it and they come busting out of the gate. I can think of, there's somebody, our friend, Track 9, who is an incredible beatboxer. She's so good. And sometimes I go like, if she just came out and went like, you know, she does do it sometimes where it's like, I'm going to teach you about this thing I did, because usually she just busts out of the gate and everybody just goes like, whoa, you know, what's that?
Yeah.
But you just think about it, it's like, and also just her demeanor and stuff is just surprising that she's going to be this incredibly great beatboxer. You know, that alone is a surprise all by itself, you know, but it's like, she does so much stuff. I mean, she's producing so many sounds with her mouth. You definitely enjoy it and you get it, you know, but it's like, you don't really get how amazing it is, I think, sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a perfect example. I thought about it so often when she was performing at Booby Trap, because it's a 4-minute set, which doesn't sound like very long. But, and obviously no offense to her skills and her performance and all that, but at the end of the day, if an audience is like wowed, like no audience can ever be like wowed 100% gas on the floor for 4 minutes of anything. You know, it's like it
although
needs that.
She gets awfully
she
close.
Does. Yeah. You know, because she kind of like hits it all in and then like somehow accelerates even more.
I mean, I'm going to say, first of all, she gets away with what I'm talking about because she's so, so cool. And also it's a beat and people just respond to, you know, music in a physical way that just works really well. So that's no diss at all to her act. And also, as you know, she just would bring the house down like constantly. She's fantastic. So when you finally hear about this Track 9/Julia, you know, I love you.
I don't know if Track 9 listens to the podcast.
Anyway, she's awesome, but there is, I think that process of leading the audience through, and that, you know, to me, that goes into another thing that took me a long time to figure out how to approach is like, trying to judge, you know, how an audience will receive something, and to judge your own work, to not be so subjective, but try to get objective on your own work. And it's really, really hard, because when you make something, you have personal pride. You know, it's like when you learn to do a trick that other great people have done, you have personal pride in it. But the fact is, on the other side, it's like, hey, you just did that thing that these other guys do. You know, and it doesn't really transfer. So there's a lot of satisfaction out of creating things that doesn't necessarily transfer to the audience. And it's that ownership and personal pride of like, wow, look what I did. So at the same time, I think you got to not try to guess what the audience is going to like, but put yourself in the audience, mm-hmm. You know, put yourself out there and go like, what do I want to see? What would surprise me at this moment? What would be really cool? What would be amazing and interesting and something to me if I was watching this, you know? And, you know, sometimes it's a little tough and you just, sometimes you go like, what I'm doing isn't all that great if I'm sitting out here watching it, if I take my personal pride, you know, out of it. But I think it's really, really good. And then also you trust yourself and just go like, I would love to see this and see that, as opposed to like, oh, I hope I get away with this and fool them, this thing that they've already seen and that they think I'm great.
Yeah. My favorite part about that idea is because everyone kind of says similar, a lot of people kind of think about that, like put yourself in the audience's perspective in like everything, not even just showbiz or entertainment. And one of my like kind of take of it is like, it's never a performer performing for people in the audience. It's never an audience sitting watching a performer. It's like, I like to think about it as that bird's eye view. if you can go high enough, you can actually see both interacting with each other. And then that's the actual perspective that I try to come. Because if I'm looking at it from the audience's perspective, then it's like, okay, well, like, it's not just the audience. The performer is kind of equally as important. But in a play, then I get to see, when I look back and see it from above, I can see the play back and forth, not just either side or the other.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah. It just reminds me, I'm like, oh, when people say like, oh, I filmed the thing, whatever you did, I filmed it. Do you want to watch it? I'm like, no, I don't want to see it. Because usually, which is dumb, because almost always, if you watch a recording of something or listen to a recording, you get something out of it. You know, yeah. There's something there. Yeah.
So
mistakes should be embraced.
Yeah. So you know, especially being particularly into music, which is, you know, inherently most of the not most of the time, but it is a type of performance that often is experienced live and in person throughout history.
Yes. I've heard of live music.
Has
yes.
been experienced live and in person. And, you know, one of the cool things that you do is create these music events at your house. When events happen, yeah. You would create these music events. So you care about, and one of my favorite, like coming to your house and being and seeing those things, it wasn't like you were like, oh, we're just doing music. It was always like the amount of time and energy that it was clear that you put into like having a whole bar set up in the kitchen and having soup on the stove and all of these things that you, A, like spend a bunch of money to do and more so spend a bunch of time preparing and creating that atmosphere for people to enjoy something. So it was like always really cool to see, oh, you like thought about every part of this audience experience from when people arrive to when they, you know, having a shuttle for people to come up the driveway because they have to park down at the end of the road. Everything was thought about. And it's one thing to think about that in an in-person event. Like, we can kind of see that. How does that attention to detail and the attention to the audience experience relate, like, practically into doing something where it's creating an animated TV show or movie or something, when it's like, well, I don't know. I'm a few more steps away from like, oh, this is going to be cool when people walk in the kitchen and there's a whole bar here.
Yeah, yeah.
So how do you get to bring that detail to something that's like, okay, well, we're going to have to write this thing, and then a voice actor has to do this thing, and then we animate it, and then audiences see it?
I mean, they're fundamentally kind of different in the sense that music, like being a stage performer, is the thing that you're doing. It's like the creating and the receiving happen at the same time. Mm-hmm. So if you're doing a juggling performance or I'm playing music somewhere, we're making it right there. And then the people are receiving it, as opposed to, let's say, being a painter, a photographer, or something like that, where you're off doing your thing. And then you go, you know, there's like a gal, you know, whatever, there's not a lot of interaction. So that whole experience I really prepare for, in terms of doing music at my house, in terms of what would I think is really cool if I showed up at somebody's house and, you know, there was live music. And, I mean, that whole thing is like just pure joy for me, doing that whole thing and the music, and it always tends to be so good. And then this creates this, people come and they meet other people because they've been there before, and it's all really super fun. I would say, in terms of when it comes to, let's say, if I'm doing animation, it's a much more drawn out process. And then the audience doesn't receive it for a very long time, and you don't see them.
Yeah.
You know, when they're getting it, you know, because they're watching it on TV or, you know, in a movie theater or something like that. But the fundamental part of it that's the same is like making myself laugh. It's like making me, you know, it's like the fun. It's like, where's the fun, you know? And the other thing is, I'm show people. It's sort of like, and so are you. And it's just like, so are so many people we know. And it's basically like, we're circus people, and I don't perform in a circus, but there's a fundamental personality trait, which is like is the classic, I want to run away with the circus. but not because I want to run away, but because I want to be in the circus, you know? And it's like, because I love performing and I love that thing. And like theaters and stages just like excite me. And the whole fun of like making something and putting it on and, you know, in the most fundamental, hey, let's put on a show kind of way, you know? And it's just like, it's a personality trait, you know? And all this, all the people that we know in like the, you know, variety act kind of world and circus world and all that kind of stuff, you know, they're all, they all have that, you know, they can't help it. Right. And, I definitely have that. So for me, the fun of production is a little different because it's kind of like within a small group, we're having fun and we're discussing how something looks or how something behaves or what it sounds like and all that kind of stuff. And, but it's really, honestly, it's just like trying to make it as fun as possible, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you got to do stuff that's not fun and there's things that get boring and stuff like that. But the fundamental drive is the same for those kind of things for me.
Love it. All right. And that's amazing. And I think there's, you know, I think we could probably talk forever on ideas and fun stories. And I think a lot of people here, I know if I was listening, if I put myself in the perspective of an audience in this, I would be like, all right, I'm pumped now. Like, I'm fired up. I got all these creative ideas brewing. But me personally, I'm in the same thing. I'm like, well, I'm interested in podcasts and lighting and audio and video and juggling and you know, hiking and drones. And it's like I'm overwhelmed all day because I'm like, I could be good at all these things. But also, oh, we have a friend.
And you could be good at all those things if you just focus.
I could be good at all those things if I focus on them. But all of those things also, as you said, that snowplow covering all the lanes. So what do you say to somebody that's listening that's like fired up? They're like, yeah, I want to go and do, I want to be a specialist. I want to be successful in this thing. But I'm also really interested in all of these other things. So how do I balance that? What do you say as someone who's done both, specialized, become the best in the world at something, but also maintained your interest and curiosity and a lot of other things? What do you say to a young person or somebody who's in that place?
Well, I mean, I there's a couple of things about that. First of all, first of all, being creative is not limited to the arts, and creativity, you know, thinking outside the box, finding different ways to do the same thing, being constrained with limitations and how you're going to do it. All these aspects of like creative thought apply to everything. They apply to filing, to, you know, a court case, to all these kind of things. And, you know, so one thing is, I don't think that people who aren't directly involved in an artistic endeavor shouldn't think that they can't be creative, because you can be creative in all these things. And it's more of a mindset than anything else. To me, the fundamental aspect of a creative mindset is curiosity and wonder. And it's an appreciation of the world and the amazing things and all of the flowers and bugs and, you know, whatever. And just having this, or looking at a building and going like, wow, look at that cool relief they put on there. And opening your eyes to like, you know, kind of how amazing the world is, and then watching somebody do something and being curious about it, you know, and then learning how to do it. And there's a really simple way to learn how to do anything, which is get someone to show you how and practice. And like anything, you want to know how to stucco a wall? Do you want to know how to play the upright bass? Do you want to know how to surf kite, whatever that's called? Get someone to show you how and practice. And it's that simple, right? And you will get better at it. Doesn't mean you're going to be a genius at it or be a breakout star or something, but you will get better at it. And the time it takes to learn something will pass whether you do it or not. So you can say like, oh, I want to learn piano. And I go like, well, in 2 years, you could probably have some piano chops. Or 2 years, you could have no piano chops. I mean, it's just that simple. The time is going to go by. Anyway, I think in terms of focusing your art, if you really need to be commercially successful at something, then focus is really, really helpful, because that ends up being the key to your marketing. It ends up being the key to your, you know, sort of, you know, all this kind of stuff, that you're the person that does puppets made out of teapots, whatever it is, right? You're the person that does these crazy red paintings, you know, that kind of thing. You know, that's just kind of the way it is. You know, for me, ultimately, it ends up being, it's like, well, I'm the thing, I'm the brand, you know,
yeah.
but it's convoluted. And, you know, I mean, like, I have agents go like, we're not really sure what to do with you. And it's like, maybe if you weren't as good at that other stuff, you know, but I do think it's really good to be interested and check stuff out. I think you can learn so many things so quickly now. There's like, you know, the freaking YouTube is insane with instruction.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. It's great. It's great. Not to mention all the sort of masterclass junk and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But like, if you need to know how to change the temperature sensor on your dishwasher, it's out there.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I think, you know, ideally what you want to find is the thing that you are passionate about and have an aptitude for. Mm-hmm. Okay. Not the thing you're passionate about that you suck at. Thing you're passionate about that you also have an aptitude for, and you go for that, you know, go for that thing. Yeah. And you can feel it in your gut, you know, yeah. you know. And yeah. Sucking is a big part of it. Important part of it.
Yeah.
Don't worry about sucking.
That's what it's all. That's the Between Dreams motto, is just go. It's like, you just got to go. It's like, yeah. That's the same thing. Yeah. It's like people are like, oh, I don't know what I'm interested in. I'm like, yeah, you do. You think about it before you go to bed. And the first thing you think about when you wake up, like most people think about something, they're like, oh, I wish I was doing that. So I think a lot of people, you know what?
You got to trust the process too. It's like, there is discovery in everything. And it's like, I'm going to start going that way, in that direction. And then I'm going to trust that something is going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
In that way. And that mistakes too are so to be embraced. Every mistake is like a rung on a ladder. And it's like, you make a bad mistake and it's like, cool, now I can take a step up because I've built that rung. You know, yeah. It's kind of like, I'm going to go take photos and I'm going to try something and I'll either get a good photo or I'll get a good lesson.
Yeah.
Right. It's just like, you know, and being fearful of mistakes and not doing it right is a total dead end emotionally and creatively.
Amazing.
Da, 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 da.
Amazing. That's amazing tie up. I'll leave you with, do you want to pick one or two of your favorite cards that you want to leave people with a lesson from one of your cards or a couple of them? Pick a couple of
these,
your favorites.
I have all of these 3x5 cards.
That have lessons and thoughts that you've accumulated through.
Yeah. I mean, this one says the single most important task for a storyteller is to keep the audience wondering what happens next. Oh, I love this one. Okay. Well, there's this one, simple ain't easy. Mm. Okay. This one is not even the best. This is a quote from the movie, The Red Shoes, where the guy who is running the ballet says this. And he says, not even the best magician in the world can produce a rabbit out of a hat if there is not already a rabbit in the hat. And what that means is, it's not magic. Okay. If you want to pull a rabbit out of a hat, you got to get a rabbit and put it in the hat. Okay. So even the best magician in the world can't pull a rabbit out of a hat if there is not already in the rabbit. It means you got to do your work.
Also, spoiler alert.
Also, spoiler alert. And then if you want to be a little more artistic, we have this. There's no money in poetry, but there's no poetry in money either.
Amazing.
I have cards.
Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing. Is there anything exciting projects that you are able to announce or from the past from the future that you want to leave people with?
I'm doing a series for Netflix, an animated series with a big fat movie star that I can't talk about yet. That's good. That's coming out. I don't know when it's coming out. And I'm just starting to work on a movie, which is based on the series of Dog Man books by Dave Pilkey, who wrote all the Captain Underpants books. So that's going to be an animated feature, probably like, I don't know, 3 years from now, we'll see that. It'll appear. It's a long process.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing all the stuff. And it's cool to chat and catch up. And now we're going to turn the microphones off and probably talk about cameras and cars again. So, all right. Thanks, man.
All right, Chris. Thank you.